Welcome to the Bogosity Podcast for the 10th of November 2014, the podcast that writes in none of the above. This is your host, Shane Killian, and joining me again this week is Charles Thomas. Charles, welcome back to the show.
Hello.
And we just had our big election day here in the United States for the midterm elections of 2014, and it looks like Republicans are in control of both the House and Senate now, or at least will be when the 114th Congress convenes.
Whoop-dee-doo.
It's change again, so it'll be more of the same.
Yep. Meet the new boss, same as the old one.
And just giving you the stats on this, 96.4% of congressional incumbents seeking re-election retained their seats, despite Congress's approval rating being a dismal 11%.
Well, you know, when you have a system that basically has crap A or crap B, you know, this is what happens.
The giant douche or the turd sandwich.
Yeah, and the third people who say, let's try for a third party, well, you know, get laughed out and just say you have to be pressured to vote for the giant douche or the turd thing. So that's what it is.
But the interesting thing is, you know, the Democrats are all up in arms about this and how horrible it's going to be. And yet, they keep telling us how great the Clinton years were. But basically, Clinton's last 6 years was a Democratic president with Republican control of both houses of Congress. So if they're saying how great the Clinton years were, aren't they saying that this is kind of a winning combination here?
Yeah, but, you know, we have to remember, Shane, they're Democrats and they just want their own party. They want the whole piece of the pie, even though they had the whole piece of the pie back in 2006, but, you know, they didn't do anything with it, but they don't want you to talk about that.
Now, I know the so-called spoiler effect has been debunked so many times it's embarrassing, but this election gives us a couple more data points to add to the mountain of evidence, showing it for the pseudoscience it is, and I'm looking at two major races where Libertarian candidates were involved. And one that the nation was watching was right here in my home state of North Carolina with my friend Sean Ha.
Mm-hmm.
And he had been retired from politics and working with political parties for, I don't know, years. And he ended up taking a job as a pizza delivery guy just to kind of make ends meet. And then he just decided he was going to run for Senate again. And he kept the pizza delivery job while he did it. So that was a lot of
fun
times and interviews.
Yeah.
Actually a working guy.
Yeah. I mean, that's just, to me, just interesting. And even though you had this all this, didn't you say last podcast it was like this all this dead money or what have you going to?
Oh, it was crazy. Well, the incumbent was Democrat Kay Hagan, and 60% of North Carolina voters hated her. So this should have been a prime opportunity for the Republicans. But then they nominated Speaker for the North Carolina House, Tom Tillis, who was hated by 80% of the voters. So all Hagan really had to do to get reelected was not be horrible, and it turns out that that's completely beyond her capacity. So
yeah. She
was actually leading until they started having the debates, and there were actually two debates that included Sean, which is awesome. And it was like, Hagan was like 6 points ahead of Tillis, and it's like after every debate, they got closer and closer, but not because Tillis was gaining, it was because Hagan was losing.
Yeah.
The money you were talking about, it first happened, and Sean and his campaign manager, Rachel Mills, they found out about this when everyone else did. All of a sudden, there are these commercials supporting Sean Ha popping up all over YouTube and everywhere else, about why you shouldn't vote for Kay Hagan because she's against marijuana legalization. You should vote for Ha. And they're like, what? Where do these come from? It turns out there was this Koch-funded organization that did it. And then another organization, I'm not even sure who it was, did the same thing with Tillis. You know, don't vote for Tillis because he's so horrible. Vote for Sean Ha instead. So I think this is about the most surreal election I've ever seen.
That is right there is insane, you know? I never thought that could actually happen. Yeah. I'm like, you know, I didn't believe it, but I saw the stuff on YouTube myself, and I was like, you gotta be kidding me. I mean, like I said in the last podcast, true justice would have been Sean Hall beating them by like 50 or 60 points.
Yeah, but as it is, he ended up getting 3.7%, which is actually pretty good for a Libertarian in a statewide race in North Carolina. Our new senator is Tom Tillis. He beat incoming Kay Hagan by less than 2%, so that means Sean's a spoiler for the election, right? Oh, wait a minute. I thought libertarians were supposed to take votes from Republicans and give them to Democrats. But now that it's gone the other way around, it's the Democrats who are complaining that Sean Ha took the votes from them. You know.
What a better campaign. That was the only thing Miss Hagan should have done. That's why we are so screwed up. We have to vote for we gotta keep voting for the less evil. I'm like, you do realize you're still voting for evil, though, right?
Well, according to the NBC News exit poll, Sean took votes equally from Democrats and Republicans, 1% of each. He got 9% of independents. Otherwise, independents went 49-42 for Tillis, so that's why Hagan lost. He was able to get that independent vote. Ha also got 4% of the liberal vote, 5% of the moderate vote, and only 2% of the conservative vote. So that's kind of like the opposite of what everyone would expect if the myth is true. This was also very much a referendum on Barack Obama. 90% of those who said that the reason they voted was to support Obama chose Hagan. 95% of those who said they voted to express opposition to Obama voted for Tillis. And as for Sean, it was 2% of those who voted to support Obama, 4% to oppose Obama, and 7% of those who said it wasn't a factor. So he was the only candidate who got more votes from the group who said that Obama wasn't a factor than for the other two.
Yeah.
And here's another myth busted. You know, libertarians are rich old guys who are out of touch with reality. Sean got 9% of the 18 to 24 vote, but only 3% of those 50 to 64 and 2% of those over 65. He also got equal votes from men and women, and he did less well among the rich. He got 6% of the under $30,000 income voters and just 1% of the over 200K crowd.
Ooh. Again, I really do wish that he could have became more of a, not a spoiler, but actually won. But
I was hoping for at least double digits, but I mean, even that was a long shot.
Yeah. Also, somewhat more local for myself, because it's in Virginia, Robert Service.
Yep.
Who supposedly cost the Republican, again, it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. He cost the Republican Ed Gillespie.
Yep. He got 2.44% of the vote, while Gillespie and Warner were only separated by a quarter of a percent.
Yeah. You know, this whole myth should go away. Are you just shaming people to vote for your Democrats or Republican?
That's pretty much it.
It's shameful. It is shameful.
Well, I got the stats here. Sarvis drew 3% from liberals, moderates, and conservatives. Like Sean, most of Sarvis's support came from independents, who were otherwise split even at 47% between Warner and Gillespie. And also like Sean, he did better among younger voters than older, was pretty much evenly split between men and women, and did better among lower income voters than higher. So that's several good myths that hopefully we can finally put to rest. Libertarians are not conservative Republicans in disguise. We're not there to help the rich over the poor. We're not the enemies of women. And we actually do better among young people. So knock it off already.
But then again, you know, you have to vote for a Democrat or Republican, man, because it's the only way, because the election is the greatest thing, or it's the worst thing in the world if we have Republicans or Democrats running all over our lives and such.
All right, now on to some results that actually made a difference. In four states, Alaska, Oregon, Florida, and Washington, D.C. I know Washington, D.C. is not a state, but work with me here.
I know.
They passed medical marijuana and full legalized marijuana initiatives everywhere but Florida. Florida had a medical marijuana initiative on the ballot, which only got 58% of the vote. It needed 60% to pass, so a majority, but not the supermajority it needed.
Keep being stupid, Florida. We never go exactly, just, you know.
They were close, though. Maybe next election they can get that other couple of percent.
Oh.
But so far, I think they're the only state to reject a medical marijuana initiative.
Yeah. Hopefully, this keeps the ball rolling, and we will have these nonviolent offenders should not go to jail. Because, again, going to prison screws your life up tremendously. You can't get a job, you can't do anything else.
What would have happened to Barack Obama if he had been arrested when he was doing marijuana?
Like most of those presidents do. If we can't own our bodies, then what's the point? I mean, if that means the state controls my body, how the heck can I own like a house or an iPad or whatever? Because if the state controls my body, everything else is just fruitless.
So in Washington, D.C., there was Initiative 71. This legalizes possession, home cultivation, and sharing of marijuana, but not commercial production or distribution. It passed 69-31%. Oregon had Measure 91, which legalizes recreational marijuana as a business along with possession and home cultivation. 54% approved that. And in Alaska, they had Measure 2. Private possession of marijuana for personal use was already legal, but you couldn't buy it anywhere. So now, similar to Oregon, they have it where you can have a business selling marijuana. That passed by 52%.
Yay.
And so now they're the fourth state to legalize marijuana.
And also, I love this about D.C. It's, when the article says, the D.C. Council now must decide whether or how to license growers and sellers, while Congress decides whether to tolerate this dramatic break from 77 years of prohibition in the nation's capital. I love that.
Well, that's how it goes. That's how it goes. It's like, it's legal. Well, we still need to control it somehow.
Yeah.
But, so we'll come in with licensing and everything else.
Yeah. And I love the fact they say it's not the war on drugs. It's prohibition, which is that it what it is. It is prohibition.
Well, this is Reason.com. They're on the ball with things like that.
Yeah. But, you know, I doubt no one else will say that. It's just, you know, they keep saying this war on drugs, which if this was really a war, we've lost.
Yeah. Long ago.
Badly.
At this point, it's kind of like what you saw in those movies from the 60s. Someone would go out to a tropical island somewhere, and there'd be a Japanese guy there who was a soldier, and he didn't realize that the war was over, and he was continuing to try to fight with them. It's kind of like that at this point. I mean, it's over, people. It's over.
Yeah, it is. It's beyond over, and we need to move on.
Well, in 2016, there are other legalization measures expected to be on the ballot in California, Arizona, Nevada, Montana, Maine, and Massachusetts. So hopefully we'll keep going with this, and hopefully it'll be expanded to other drugs, too, as people see that legalizing marijuana is not the apocalypse they're making it out to be.
Yeah, and I can't wait for this to happen. Like, you know, maybe the war, like, man, this war on drugs, I hope we even make a period to say that, man, the war on drugs was really stupid. Like, we look back at Prohibition and how stupid and wasteful that is.
It'll be something you'll tell your grandchildren that the government did, and they won't believe you.
Yeah.
And something else, we've talked before about how GMO labels that the anti-GMO nut bars support, how they're fundamentally misleading. So it's a good thing that voters rejected GMO labeling in Oregon and Colorado. Colorado rejected it 68-32%. And in Oregon, it was a lot closer, 51%. Were against and 49% in favor.
What would it take for these people? I feel like they actually have to have like government sanctions or something that say, see, government is great. They sanctioned this. Now it's good and everything else. Even though.
No, that'll just make them go all conspiracy crazy. Like they always do. But I mean, they were just lying outright on these measures. Like in Oregon's Measure 92, they claimed the Food and Drug Administration, quote, does not require or conduct safety studies of genetically engineered foods. How many times have you heard that?
Wow.
Instead, any safety consultations are voluntary, and genetically engineered food developers may decide what information to provide to the agency. Market approval of genetically engineered food is based on industry research alone. That is a complete lie.
So much bogosity.
I mean, there is no difference between what genetically modified foods have to go through and what other foods do. Each new variety of crop, the information gets sent to the FDA regulators, and they keep doing that until the FDA regulators just run out of questions. So, I mean, it's actually a pretty big rigmarole, much bigger than it needs to be.
Ugh.
Because if something is safe in one crop, then it's going to be safe in all crops. You shouldn't have to get an approval for each new variety, but that's what they have to do. So if anything, it's overregulated.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's completely insane. How many people will be saved if they actually let those GMOs come down those third or fourth world countries that need, you know, that don't have the soil, don't have the technology that we do? You know, we could save millions of lives, get people fed, and actually, you know, have, you know, instead of actually, you know, having them starving and everything. But instead, well, we have these, well, we gotta put this thing in. You don't know what those evil GMOs might be up to.
And this next part from Measure 92 is just an outright lie. Quote, The genetic engineering of plants and animals often causes unintended consequences. Manipulating genes via genetic engineering and inserting them into organisms is an imprecise process. The results are not always predictable or controllable. Mixing plant, animal, bacterial, and viral genes through genetic engineering in combinations that cannot occur in nature may produce results that lead to adverse health or environmental consequences. And I mean, we've covered this stuff before. Plant, animal, bacteria, virus, genes are genes. We're all based on the same chemistry. The gene is the protein that it makes, not the organism that it comes from. And, I mean, they talk about how imprecise it is. How is it any more imprecise than hybridization, which is basically just like throwing a deck of cards in the air and letting them fall wherever they may, and then just hoping you get something good?
Where's the citation here? And they say this is all dangerous. They got the world... Health Organization says there are no effects on human health have been shown as a result of the consumption of such foods by the general population in the countries where they have been approved. And then you have the European Commission says a study of 50 studies and said there's no risk whatsoever. What does it then have to take? What will it take for this whole thing, the GMO stuff, to end?
And you also have the American Medical Association saying, quote, bioengineered foods have been consumed for close to 20 years, and during that time, no overt consequences on human health have been reported and or substantiated in the peer-reviewed literature.
Amazing. Unless this is a part of what a big Monsanto conspiracy it is, which, and yet they come to say libertarians and people who are independent and all this type of stuff are crazy, yet they share this stuff around. I don't get it. I just don't.
And they go into the whole herbicide thing. Quote, genetically engineered crops are designed to withstand herbicides and therefore promote indiscriminate herbicide use. I mean, we've been over that. We've talked about how they actually use fewer herbicides with GMO crops. And that's the point. The herbicides they use are less toxic than the ones that they used before. So fewer and safer herbicides. I mean, they are just completely 180 degrees wrong.
Yeah.
And Colorado's Proposition 105 wasn't any more honest. Quote, U.S. federal law does not provide for the regulation on the safety and labeling of genetically modified food. Lie. The long-term health, safety, and environmental consequences of growing and consuming genetically modified food are not yet fully researched and not yet well understood by science. Lie, lie, lie. That's all they have are lies.
Yeah. You should basically have a warning for people who have common sense. If you look at this thing, keep sharp objects away because you might stab yourself. Because this stuff has been, this stuff right here has been disproven so many times. It's just like the old, like the saying, I think, if you repeat a lie long enough, people will believe it. It just, people retreat this lie after lie after lie, 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 and then it comes up like this. I just don't get this.
Or they also do the shotgun approach where they just tell 50 different lies, and so even if you go through and debunk 30 of them, the people think, well, you know, maybe there's still some more, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire, which is not true and has never been true.
Or they just, with this brilliant thing, Shane, you know, you heard this, like, hey, I'm just asking questions.
Yeah.
Because your questions are stupid and they've already been disproven.
If you ask the question in a way that suggests it hasn't been answered, you know, we call that pulling a Lindy.
Yeah.
Well, some very good news from Arizona. Voters approved state nullification as part of the Arizona Constitution, and this is Proposition 122, which gives them the power to, quote, exercise its sovereign authority, it's meaning the Arizona state government, to restrict the actions of its personnel and the use of its financial resources to purposes that are consistent with the Constitution. Yeah, they don't want to have to comply with NSA spying or any other unconstitutional things the feds want them to do. So, and this is perfectly in line with Supreme Court precedent. Prigg versus Pennsylvania in 1842, New York versus U.S. in 1992, Prince versus U.S. in 97, and National Federation of Businesses versus Sebelius in 2012. All of these, the Supreme Court said the federal government cannot force states to help them implement or enforce any federal act or program.
Yeah, and this is it. It's something even from the James Madison with the Federalist Papers mm-hmm. said this stuff as well. It just seems like we've forgotten that. And this right here, we have like, we have at least the state is saying, okay, we are going to take responsibility. Like, if you have the freedom to do so, this means you have to have the responsibility to say, hey, this is on us. It's not people in Washington or anything else. This is on us.
Well, this referendum doesn't actually do anything on its own except put that in the Constitution. And the difference is now when there's another referendum that someone wants to put up to direct the state of Arizona not to comply with the federal government, they don't have to go through the constitutional process where they have to get, you know, like tons of signatures and whatsoever to get it on the ballot. They can just do it as a statutory referendum. It's a lot easier to get on the ballot and a lot fewer signatures and things like that. And one of the things it looks like they're going to do is dealing with federal rules that allow Arizona Child Protective Services to hide information and keep it secret, even from the justice systems. And there have been several investigations in deaths of children under the care of Arizona CPS. And in the investigations, time after time, CPS used these federal rules as a reason to refuse to disclose information. And so now they can use this as a process to forbid state cooperation with that transparency and say, no, you can't keep that transparent. We need to investigate. We need to find out what happened to these children and what role you played.
Exactly. I don't get how this type of stuff, you know, it should be common sense that, hey, you're doing something wrong. There's something in the system that's flawed. Let's go and fix it. Why is it so hard? Our people are just so daggone lazy and they don't want to rock the boat or anything. It just, you know, it's frustrating. Oh, very frustrating.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about this Jack Biltis guy who helped get it on the ballot. And just to let you know how hard it is to get a constitutional referendum on the ballot in Arizona, it ended up costing $1.2 million. He had to mortgage his home, and he got help from the Arizona 10th Amendment Center and others to get it on the ballot in 2012. He didn't quite get enough signatures, but they ended up getting enough to get it on the ballot in 2014.
Yeah, I mean, that's sacrifice right there.
But he moved to the U.S. from Montreal 20 years ago, and he's motivated by the fact that he's worried watching America follow the same path as Canada. Quote, I've seen this movie play out before, and I can't risk my kids' futures on it playing out again. I've seen what an overreaching government can do. We couldn't run a business. If we answered the phone in English, the language police could shut us down. We paid 70% of what we earned in taxes. Once the government had control of healthcare in Canada, things got even worse. After surgery, my father-in-law couldn't get a needed medication because it required government authorization, and the government office was already closed. The hospital admitted that he would die that night without the medication, but was not allowed to sell it to us because that wouldn't be fair to those who couldn't afford the medication. We were eventually able to get the medication through the black market.
Yeah.
If America goes the way of Canada, there is no other place to escape. After seeing Washington's takeover of the healthcare, auto, and financial industries, I realized that the government is not operating under any semblance of control. Bringing back federalism is the only way to make the government accountable and keep us free.
Wow. Every time I hear something is too good to be true, it usually is. And with Canada's system, the more I hear about it, the more I'm just getting a little bit more. Because I do like the idea of universal health care, regardless of pay structure or anything else, which to me, this is right there. That's, you know, bogosity. Saying that people, you know, that wouldn't be fair to those who couldn't afford the medication. I'm like, no, this person's dying. This person is dying, and you're going to basically save that for what? This goes against any type of doctor. I mean, a doctor should help its patient, not, you know, kill them.
So this isn't some rich guy trying to get a free pass. He mortgaged his home to get it on the ballot, and that's what the small fry have to do. The rich cronies who love centralized government control continue to fleece us all with no real consequences to themselves. So those who say that libertarianism and federalism are all about protecting the rich aren't just liars. They're disgusting psychopaths who care nothing about the real problems that people who aren't rich and politically connected face.
Yeah, that's how the bailouts happen. That's how all these other things happen, because the people who are rich and powerful, they have the ear of our elected officials more than we do. So, again, the person there has to mortgage his house. He has to do everything. Has to move mountains. You know, it's the same thing. I see it happen all the time in local politics and the national. So, you know, that's why I've become so bitter.
All right, one more to cover, and this is another good one from Arizona. Proposition 303 was approved, which allows patients in dire need of medication to obtain it even without FDA approval, making it the fourth state to do so after Colorado, Louisiana, and Missouri.
Awesome.
And this goes with medicines that have completed phase one of clinical trials, and phase one is where you test the safety. Everything after that is just efficacy. So these drugs, we already know they're safe, but you know, you're going to tell this dying person, you know, who could possibly be helped by this medicine, well, you're not even allowed to try because we're not sure it's going to work. Well, geez, what's the worst that could happen?
You know, it's crazy stuff like that. If this thing is going to help someone, what's the worst case scenario? The person dies, the person's going to die either way.
And there are still some limitations. I mean, these limitations exist anyway, but I mean, so far, it's only terminally ill patients, not patients who are going blind, losing their ability to walk or whatever. You need a good doctor who will be able to actually research the opportunities available. Also, it does nothing about the expense of the drugs. They just have to buy them from the drug company, if the drug company is even willing to sell it to them.
Yeah, but it's a start.
Yeah, it's a step in the right direction. Good for Arizona. Bogosity.tv is a participant in the Amazon Services LLC Associates Program, an affiliate advertising program designed to provide a means for sites to earn advertising fees by advertising and linking to Amazon.com. Just clear your cookies and go to Amazon.bogosity.tv, or check the right-hand side of the podcast page for Amazon's best deals, including the deal of the day and limited-time lightning deals on all sorts of great products. So next time you buy online, go to Amazon.bogosity.tv. All right, let's unseat the news of the bogus. And this is something I think we all need to be aware of in this day and age of cops seizing your cell phone or whatever and going through it. According to Virginia Circuit Court Judge Stephen C. Frucci, or Frucci, I'm not sure how that's pronounced, he supported what the courts have been saying all along, and this is important because it's now in a circuit court. If your phone is locked by something like a fingerprint scanner, they can force you to unlock it, but if it's locked with a code or a password, they can't, because it violates your Fifth Amendment rights against self-incrimination.
Mm-hmm.
So they can force you to do your thumbprint scanner or turn over a YubiKey or whatever else you've locked it with physically, but they can't make you give up a code or a password or anything like that.
Yeah, they can make you just put a gun to your head and say, well, you're going to get that thing.
They can't legally make you. Yeah, but the interesting thing is, in this case, the guy had an iPhone that was protected by Touch ID. And basically what they said was, well, Touch ID is a fingerprint. They can make him do that. But here's the thing. I mean, he could have Touch ID and a passcode, in which case it wouldn't do them any good because they can't make him tell him the passcode. And also, if Apple's Touch ID hasn't been used for 48 hours, it requires a passcode to unlock it. So all you really need to do is get your lawyer to tie things up for 48 hours, and then all of a sudden they need a passcode to get in, which they can't force you to give up. And if you try and restart it, it automatically requires a passcode. So they can't get around it that way either.
Well, again, it won't stop them basically putting a gun to your head saying you're going to give it that passcode. So, yeah.
Yeah, but then you can get it thrown out of court because it's a violation of your Fifth Amendment rights.
Give it time, Shane. They'll take those things out too, because, hey, those evil criminals are out there, and we have to make sure the police get everything they want, because, you know, God forbid, they might actually be wrong, so, you know, we gotta put them in their prison.
Policemen be wrong? Perish the thought.
Heresy.
So one of the things I like doing on election year is taking pictures of the candidates I voted for and putting them online. A lot of people do this, and if you've been on my Facebook timeline, you saw me do it this year with Sean Ha and a local writing candidate for Sheriff Anthony Huss. Turns out that's actually illegal in many states, and North Carolina is one of them.
Ooh.
Oops.
And oh goodness, I'm scared.
Yeah. This is from the Digital Media Law Project, which did an examination of ballot disclosure laws. And they call this a First Amendment anomaly, quote, many states have statutes that prohibit the display of one's own marked ballot to others. A small number of these states only prohibit disclosure of one's ballot in the voting room or prior to submission of the ballot, but must impose a flat prohibition on disclosure backed up by criminal penalties or cancellation of the voting question. These statutes, by their explicit terms, appear to ban sharing of a photograph of one's ballot even after the election is over. The First Amendment's protection is at its peak in the realm of speech on political issues. Can a law prohibiting a voter from disclosing his or her own marked ballot be constitutional?
I understand some of this part of it as well, saying you don't want someone influencing your vote or anything else. You don't want someone to, like, you know.
But, I mean, you should be able to voluntarily show people who you voted for. You know, we're not talking about, like, putting a camera on a stick, sticking it over the booth and see when the guy next to you voted for or anything like that. I think we'd all agree that's bad.
Yeah. But I see what you're saying. Like, hey, instead of just telling them, like, hey, you know what? Here's my picture. Here's what people I voted for. And maybe people might look at this and say, hey, maybe I might go and vote sometime. Or, you know, that would be actually interesting. It would actually increase discussion.
But it's actually being enforced in places. They talk about New Hampshire, you know, the free state, and they made it against the law to take, quote, a digital image or photograph of his or her marked ballot and distributing or sharing the image via social media, and is punished by a fine of up to $1,000.
Wow, that's a lot of money right there.
Yeah, and at least 3 people have been investigated for it.
Yeah, a lot of people, man. That is a lot of money for just taking a selfie, you know.
History is written by the winners, and so apparently is economics. That's why there's LibertyClassroom.com. Probably the best single learning resource for history and economics on the web, LibertyClassroom.com teaches U.S. history, Western Civ, and economics from actual university professors. There's lots of free material to get you started, including introductory lectures on all these subjects. And when you sign up, you get the full site's content for just $99 a year, less than the price of 2 cups of coffee a month. And if you type in the promo code BOGOSITY in all caps, you'll get your first year for just $88. Lectures are available in both video and audio format, so you can watch or listen to them on your computer, your phone or tablet, or in your car. Learn at your own pace about the subjects you're interested in and become a more effective debater. You'll also get access to lots of supplemental materials and even the professors themselves via the discussion forum and even live video chats. Inform yourself against the myths and propaganda of our society. Visit LibertyClassroom.com. So, big news in the wake of the Ferguson protests. You might remember the FAA declared a no-fly zone over the protests at the behest of the local police, and members of the press at the time were saying that it was to keep press helicopters from shooting aerial shots and reporting on what was really going on. And we talked about that, and of course all the statists whine and say, no, that's a conspiracy theory, the state is good, our Lord and Savior Barack H. Obama would never ever do anything like that. Well, guess what? The FAA admitted on audio recordings that the ban was at the request of local police authorities in order to keep the media out.
Shocker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's always something, man. It's always they can't be honest with the people. Instead of being honest with them, they say we have to trick them. You got to lie to them. You got to shut the place down. That's what they have to do.
Well, and they actually claimed that there were shots fired at a police helicopter, and that's why they need to keep him out. But there was no damage to the helicopter. They couldn't provide an incident report on the shooting. And on the tapes, an FAA manager described this as unconfirmed rumors.
We don't know that, Shane. I mean, that could have been huge. You don't know how those protesters have with those anti-aircraft guns. You don't know down there. I mean, aren't you against the police officers, Shane? They are always right.
But the only exceptions they put in were for police helicopters and for aircraft taking off and landing from the local airport. And even though the FAA administrator, Michael Huerta, tried to say, quote, FAA cannot and never will exclusively ban media from covering an event of national significance, the report also specifically said, quote, only relief aircrafts under direction of St. Louis County Police Department are authorized in the airspace. Aircraft landing and departing St. Louis Lambert Airport are exempt, but they don't exempt press helicopters. So, I mean, by the language of it, they did restrict them. And according to these audio tapes, that the AP got under the Freedom of Information Act, that was exactly why they wanted to keep the press out.
It's about power. They want to completely control the story. They want to control the story and say this type of stuff is going on. They don't want to cover the atrocities and such because, you know, you have police officers attacking media personnel and people like saying, well, you know, the police have a right to do all that. I'm like, no, they don't. They don't have the right to attack the media. I mean, if you want to have that, then fine. Don't go live in those police, crazy police states. I don't want to live in a place where the police can have free reign to do what they want. We need them to start accepting some responsibility, you know, personal responsibility, which most of these people keep like campaigning about personal responsibility, except for government officials, police officers, you know, anyone with government sense, like they're exempt from personal responsibility. It's up to the citizens to have personal responsibility.
Hackers, terrorists, the NSA. But I repeat myself. Your online security is under attack, and the weakest point is your password. That's why you need LastPass. LastPass plugs into your browser and allows you to randomly generate strong, unique passwords anywhere on the web, all protected by one master password. LastPass sets up in minutes and gives you secure automatic logins throughout the web, synchronizing across all your browsers and all your computers, at home, at work, or on the road. It even securely stores sensitive form data, including credit card numbers. Backup sensitive documents, membership info, Wi-Fi logins, and more. And with LastPass Premium, you can get these benefits on other applications and even mobile devices, and also get priority customer support. Sign up at password.pagosity.tv for a free month of LastPass Premium. Log in securely everywhere using the last password you'll ever have to remember. Go to password.pagosity.tv and get LastPass now. And now it's time to make a scary mask out of this week's biggest bogon emitter. And this week it goes to Newington, Connecticut Elementary Schools because they, get this, canceled Halloween.
Oh, that's stupid.
Yeah. They canceled all their Halloween events. They sent a letter to parents saying they didn't want to exclude children of families who didn't celebrate Halloween. In other words, right-wing religious extremists who call it Satan worship and all that.
Even though it's not actually Satan worship, it's basically still of a... I think they still have some Christian descent in that in Halloween.
It's a Druid harvest festival is what it is.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, it's not even close to that. It's just, you know, they don't even... You know what? I you know what? It just seems like it's really petty. It's petty.
Now, they did have a fall festival, but there's nothing Halloween-oriented... And children can only dress up as characters from books. But isn't pretty much anything in a book somewhere? A ghost, a witch, a zombie? You can find a book, whatever you want to dress up as, you can find a character in a book.
You know, it doesn't make any sense to me that people are so terrified. I guarantee these are the same people who are just like, paralyzed, pissed off that we can't say Christmas anymore. There's a war on Christmas. But yet, basically try to shut down Halloween. Even though it's basically shut down anyway because of the marketing of Christmas, like that. I mean, seriously, I saw Christmas advertisement like in the middle of Halloween. I'm like, they can't even wait anymore.
I saw a political cartoon. It was a turkey talking to Santa Claus, and the turkey's saying, "Wait your turn, fat boy."
Exactly.
Yeah, and the parents are complaining about this, not about the Christmas thing, but about shutting down Halloween. One parent said,
"They should complain about the Christmas stuff."
One parent said, quote, "Everyone's politically correct now, and you don't want to insult anyone's denomination or religion. That's not a statement of support. That's a statement against." And another one said, quote, "I think it's ridiculous. I don't find it to be a big religious thing. The kids just get together with their costumes and have fun. It's not like they talk about much. It's just a day to have fun at school."
Yeah, it doesn't hurt anybody, and they get free candy. That's a kid's paradise.
And when Fox CT News tried to call school officials, they didn't hear back. Imagine that.
Yeah. So, you know what the best thing about Halloween is? It's not the movies or the costumes. You know what the best thing about it?
What's that?
Is that candy, those big boxes of candy are like a half off. You can get them by the back. You can just go out there and say, yeah, this is for, yeah, my, I'm giving a trick or treating. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. I just run out in the store, just gouge on them. That's why I'm so fat.
So Newington, Connecticut Elementary Schools just have to be this week's biggest bogon emitter. Bogosity.tv and all of its services are hosted at GoDaddy. I've been very satisfied with GoDaddy's services and their wonderful 24/7 customer support for over 10 years now. So I'm happy to be able to give you this special offer. Just sign up for any new domain, web hosting, email, or other service and get 35% off with the code WOWNOBOGON. That's WOWNOBOGON. Because there's nothing bogus about these savings on quality internet hosting. Just go to GoDaddy.com and use the code WOWNOBOGON. And now let's revoke the life insurance policy of this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire.
And this week, it goes to Ezekiel J. Emanuel, one of Obama's advisors to healthcare and big-time proponent of universal healthcare. He's the one behind what many in the press call death panels, and explicitly favored rationing as a means of delivering scarce healthcare resources evenly. But none of that is why he gets this week's nomination. It's actually because apparently he's been listening to the Rolling Stones too much, because he says, get this, he wants to die at age 75.
Why? That's, to me, a very specific age.
I know. And he's not saying he wants euthanasia or anything. I mean, he's been explicitly against that. You know, he's not saying he's going to jump off a cliff when he's 75 or anything, but let's just go over his comments. Quote, living too long is also a loss. It renders many of us, if not disabled, then faltering and declining, a state that may not be worse than death, but is nonetheless deprived. It robs us of our creativity and ability to contribute to work, society, the world. It transforms how people experience us, relate to us, and most important, remember us. We are no longer remembered as vibrant and engaged, but as feeble, ineffectual, even pathetic. Geez, egotistical much?
Yeah. Wow. This person never met my grandma when she was alive. She was like up there and she was still feisty. She was, up there. She was like still high energy for the most part.
Oh, that's how my grandmother was. And she died at like 92 or 93. And then she broke her hip, and that was her steep decline, and she died like 2 months later. But, I mean, it's a 90-year-old woman just getting up and going around.
Yeah, that just, it's just like someone, that is really egotistical, saying, I don't want to, just like 75. You know, that's it? You want to cut your life off there and just miss out, basically, more things and more interesting stuff? I mean, I could wake up dead tomorrow, you know, I don't know. But 75? I mean, that's saying, yeah, that's it. I'm done. No, you're not. You're not. That's again, very egotistical.
My mother's 76, and I mean, geez, she's just up and about doing everything.
Mm.
He says, quote, I am talking about how long I want to live and the kind and amount of health care I will consent to after 75. I think this manic desperation to endlessly extend life is misguided and potentially destructive for many reasons. 75 is a pretty good age to stop and just buckle your seatbelts for his reasons, like, quote, since 1960, increases in longevity have been achieved mainly by extending the lives of people over 60. Rather than saving more young people, we are stretching out old age. But as life has gotten longer, has it gotten healthier? Is 70 the new 50? Not quite. It is true that compared with their counterparts 50 years ago, seniors today are less disabled and more mobile, but over recent decades, increases in longevity seem to have been accompanied by increases in disability, not decreases. Yeah, because people are living longer in order to get the disability.
And this is, again, this is not a bad thing. People are living longer. I mean, it used to be like, hey, you're 50 years old, you're done. Now you're like 75, 80, 90. I mean, why is this? I mean, people are living longer. Maybe people have better ideas, more interesting, more wisdom to share. Why is this, again, someone saying, oh, you know, we have to get conk out at 75. It doesn't make any sense.
And he talks about Eileen Crimmins in the National Health Interview Survey. Quote, in 1998, about 28% of American men 80 and older had a functional limitation. By 2006, that figure was nearly 42%. And for women, the result was even worse. More than half of women 80 and older had a functional limitation. Crimmins' conclusion, there was an increase in the life expectancy with disease and a decrease in the years without disease. The same is true for functioning loss, an increase in expected years unable to function. So people are living longer even with disabilities. I mean, you know, like, let's say you're looking at people over 80, and most of the people you're looking at are 80 to 90. Now you're looking at people who are 80 to 100. Well, duh, yeah, of course the percentage is going to go up. Basic statistics, people.
They don't know how to math.
He also cites the Harvard School of Public Health, quote, not just physical, but also mental disabilities such as depression and dementia. They found not a compression of morbidity, but in fact an expansion and increase in the absolute number of years lost to disability as life expectancy rises. Yeah, again, what would you expect?
Again, why is this a bad? We may actually solve these problems now. I mean, we all know what we're doing with stem cells. I mean, we're doing great stuff with that. I'm just going to just, okay, stop it right now. And by the way, like, oh, we stopped and we go care for the old, for the young. The young are going, you know, to heal quickly and do all this type of stuff. The young, they're saying, like, oh, the hospital stuff won't care for the young. No, they're working on stuff for the young, too. It's not like a zero-sum game.
Well, look at my case. You know, when I was hit by the drunk driver in 2006, I'm kind of not getting around very well. You know, I can't go out walking 5 miles like I used to be able to. I can't go out and, you know, run around the house several times and things like that. But I'm basically getting around and, you know, I can live a full life the rest of my life. And there's no reason why, you know, I shouldn't be able to live as long as anyone else. But if we hadn't had the technology that we did then, even if I survived the accident, I'd probably be wheelchair bound. I probably wouldn't have the use of my right arm. And I'd be living a more sedentary life, wouldn't be as fit, probably would be a lot more overweight, and probably would be looking for an early grave. And if I was to get in that position and then die before 80, then I wouldn't even make it to that statistic. And now, hopefully, I'll live well past 80, and I'll be one of those statistics of those guys over 80 who aren't getting around too well. But hey, I'll take it.
Yeah, we'll take all of that. That's good. When you say this type of stuff, saying, oh, the being old, and that means you're feeble, you're weak, you're this, that, and the other. It's just, you know, again, this person really has a lot of, again, hubris, this ego thing.
Well, he also says, quote, the contemporary dying process has been elongated. Death usually results from the complications of chronic illness, heart disease, cancer, emphysema, stroke, Alzheimer's, diabetes. Again, because people are now living long enough to get those things. I mean, I've heard this before from universal healthcare proponents. They're saying, like, oh, look at NHS, you know, look at the people. Far fewer of them have Alzheimer's than in America. It's like, okay, first of all, there is no cure or treatment for Alzheimer's. So are you saying that they just have magic wands that they wave or what? No, it's because people in America are living longer. If you make it to 65, your long-term prospects are much better here than they are in England, so of course we're going to have more people with Alzheimer's.
You know, you just can't just look at people who are old and say, well, you know, it's over. No, it's not over. You know, it's not over because you can't do this because you're old or anything. You can still be active and still have fun.
Well, this next quote, I think, just tells you everything you need to know about him. Quote, living parents also occupy the role of head of the family. They make it hard for grown children to become the patriarch or matriarch.
What?
Because it's all about power. It's all about ruling over others.
Really? That is the most stupidest thing I've heard. It's just like that. I mean, how? What do you mean that it stops someone to basically being the head of the household when they're young or something? Like, no, they can move away and start their own family. That's what happened. So, like, basically, I know maybe some families, you know, do that stuff, but it is, again, this person has so much ego and is wrong in so many ways. It's laughable. It's really laughable.
And he also says, quote, many of us have suppressed, actively or passively, thinking about God, heaven, and hell, and whether we return to the worms. We are agnostics or atheists, or just don't think about whether there is a God. Most of us have found a way to live our lives comfortably without acknowledging, much less answering, these big questions on a regular basis. We have gotten into a productive routine that helps us ignore them. Now, that is not what agnostics and atheists do. I accept the fact when I'm dead, that's it.
And I'm a Christian here, so, you know, I accept I'll probably hopefully go to heaven. Then again, I'm hanging on with Shane, so I'm probably going to be right there with you. but yeah, that is, again, this hubris, this whole thing, like, everyone's an agnostic. No! This stuff, again, this ego, This dude has such a high opinion of himself and saying that this is how everything is supposed to be.
It's really scary that this guy's had the ear of the president. All the more significant that Ezekiel J. Emanuel has been named this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire.
Well, that wraps up this There's a Big Swing Here to the Silly Party edition of the Bogosity Podcast. Please visit the forums at bogosity.tv, where you can read the show notes and join the discussion on these and other subjects. This podcast is free but not free to produce, so please donate via PayPal or Bitcoin at the top of the bogosity.tv website or down the right-hand side of the podcast page, and give generously to keep this podcast going. And if you'd like to contribute to the podcast, just send a question, statement, news article, or rant to podcast@bogosity.tv. Put it in an audio file, and if it's good enough, it'll get played right in the podcast. Thank you for listening, and thanks again to Charles Thomas for joining me.
Yeah, I was the only guy available.
Sadly, that is true. Until next time, here's a quote from John Keats. I long to believe in immortality. I shall never be able to bid you an entire farewell. If I am destined to be happy with you here, how short is the longest life? I wish to believe in immortality. I wish to live with you forever. The Bogosity Podcast is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License.
Bogosity.
Christmas time is coming, and the most classic of Christmas stories is A Christmas Carol. But how much do you know about the original Charles Dickens novella? Have you dismissed it as a children's book with one-dimensional characters amounting to nothing but platitudes and cliches? Maybe your appreciation of the book was even muted by those dry, boring, annotated books they made you read in school. My book, the sarcastically annotated A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, uses both facts and humor to present the book in a way you probably haven't seen it before. Giving praise when deserved and beratement when warranted, this book is put in the perspective of its time and shows a dimensional, multi-layered Ebenezer Scrooge from start to finish. Skepticism, history, and even economics are employed to show the book in relation to today in an easily accessible format. Appreciate the Christmas of your youth all over again. Get The Sarcastically Annotated A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, available at Amazon and on PDF as well.